You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. A former interpreter for the U.S. Marines in Afghanistan says getting his family out of the Taliban-controlled country feels impossible after they were left behind during the U.S. withdrawal in August. As Hope Kerwin reports, the Wisconsin resident has memories of the Taliban taking over Afghanistan when he was a child and worries about his family's future.
For 2 weeks in October, Johnny could not reach his parents in Afghanistan.
Their phone was off, and I was a little bit worried about them.
Johnny Five is the nickname U.S. Marines gave him while he worked as an interpreter between 2010 and 2013. He now lives in Fitchburg, but he didn't want to use his real name to protect his family. Because Johnny and his brother worked as interpreters, his family was eligible to come to the U.S., but only two of his brothers made it into the Kabul airport during the American evacuation. 13 of his family members couldn't make it through the crowds. A spokesperson from the U.S. State Department said anyone eligible for the U.S. refugee admissions programs must be outside of Afghanistan to begin the process. The department recognizes leaving the country is, quote, extremely difficult. To Johnny, it seems impossible. Many of his family members' passports were destroyed at a Taliban checkpoint. Now they're in hiding.
We grew up in a place somewhere everybody knows us, you know, like our friends, our family, our relative, and the neighbors, and people who went to school with.
They don't know which neighbors might tip off the Taliban to their connection to the U.S. military.
You won't even know that somebody reported you. They just come at night, and they knock on your door, and they just take you on a known location.
He says it all reminds him of one of his first experiences with the Taliban, shortly after they took over Afghanistan in 1996. Johnny guesses he was 5 or 6 at the time. He remembers his mother was tense and kept looking outside.
Here and there, she would throw out some words and saying like, oh, I feel like there's something going on outside, and I feel like there's some people are coming. And we were like, we just didn't know. We had no idea what's happening.
Johnny remembers the sound of an explosion when a helicopter was shot down near their house. He says a neighbor came to check on them. The neighbor's father had been injured, and some soldiers agreed to drive him to the closest clinic. Johnny's mom decided it was time to leave, too. Johnny rode in the bed of a pickup truck driven by two Taliban fighters and remembers bodies lining the road.
Those are the moments I will never forget. You know, that's how I picture Taliban.
Johnny keeps wondering what his 7-year-old sister is experiencing as a new era of Taliban rule begins and how he can help his family flee. But those working to evacuate Afghans say getting people out of the country without outside assistance is highly unlikely. Zach Lois is a former member of the Army Special Forces and is originally from Burlington, Wisconsin. He's been working with a group called Task Force Pineapple to evacuate Afghan allies.
Most of these individuals are people that we know personally. These are former combat interpreters of ours. These are former Afghan special forces.
Lois said the Taliban have control of the passport offices and the airports, making air travel a major risk for anyone who's considered a high-value target. And that's just one of the hurdles.
They can't work, so the funding is a major issue. They're being hunted, so they need any kind of support they can get to be given intelligence and early warning.
His task force has put together a list of 100,000 people that they believe are eligible for evacuation to the U.S. So far, they've helped 380 people leave the country. The State Department spokesperson said the agency is assisting U.S. citizens on a case-by-case basis. They plan to help legal permanent residents and SIV holders as space allows, but they will not be assisting extended family members of U.S. citizens like Johnny.
If peace is not coming, then I want my family to be evacuated somewhere. I don't know how to find it. As a U.S. citizen, I think I do have a right to just ask the government, my family's in danger.
Johnny says living here means little if his loved ones continue to be in danger. Hope Kerwin, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And now we're at the intersection of entrepreneurism, urban farming, and sustainability. What a pleasure to meet Milwaukee native Angela Moraney. In 2015, Angela transformed an enormous backyard on a blighted property into an urban micro farm with this higher calling to address food deserts and make incredible salsas and grow closer to the land to help people thrive. Are you familiar with That Salsa Lady brand? Are you interested in urban farming and how to get it started? Join in 800-642-1234. Angelo Moraney is founder of That Salsa Lady, growing many salsa ingredients in the Lincoln Creek neighborhood on Milwaukee's north side. Angela, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much. It's great being here.
Well, let's start with a tour of your farm, if you will. Walk us through it. Give us a picture in our mind's eye.
Well, you would not realize it was a huge urban farm behind the house, because we just have one bed in the front and a little bit on the side. But you'll see anything from herbs like lemongrass to kale to tomatoes to sweet peppers and hot peppers.
And this is big. This is a, you know, you're on a half acre, isn't that right?
Yeah, just about. Wow. And the community, it's great because the neighbors always like the goodies.
But you you lost some veggies last night in the frost?
We did. I record, like a lot of us, you know, we have a lot on our schedule, so I record my news, and I totally, I thought the present news was from last night. I didn't realize I was watching live news. So I looked out yesterday. I'm like, oh, no. But, you know, stuff happens. But fortunately, I did cut back a lot of the main things that we needed. So I just lost some of my pineapple sage.
You saw something in this property that many other people wouldn't see, this crumbling, abandoned piece of property, turning that, you know, for your neighborhood into this renewed sense of purpose and entrepreneurism, and not to mention this really fresh food. Can you tell us about that change and what you saw?
It was really great, because I wasn't, I was always hoping, we were always hoping for, you know, our own property. I've owned a couple of houses, came back from Atlanta in 2004, and just, you know, hit the ground running. And when this fell into our lap, a developer had just done some basic stuff with it, and I came across it, and they were willing to sell it to me. And I really didn't care about the house, incredibly. I cared about the land, because it just sat for 10 years, and I kept thinking, oh, my gosh, the soil must be amazing. And it was, and it still is.
In terms of the social justice component, because you're well aware food deserts are not an accident.
Yes.
They're not
yes.
naturally occurring. They come from systemic racism, with discrimination in how you do zoning codes and lack of developers willing to invest in an area. You take pride in being a Black-owned, woman-owned salsa company. How is the fight for equality and justice, how is that rooted in your salsa and in what you're doing?
It's actually, I'm so glad you asked that question, because we have a large swath of our clients actually are not Black, but they all are very dedicated to healthy food and to spreading that message. And our salsa is a perfect entity of diversity. You have yellow peppers, you have red tomatoes and red onions and cilantro. Some people cannot stand cilantro. But we have salsas that don't have cilantro. But it all comes together in this great, yummy, you know, satisfactory, fresh appetizer. And what we do is I'll say it this way. Sharon Adams from Walnut Way over a decade ago says, everyone comes to the table over food. So what we use salsa as an introduction to not just, you know, food, but to our commonalities and what we love. People tend to associate our salsas with Latin and Latinx communities. Actually, our salsa derived from our Nigerian heritage. Mm. It's called Ada Din Din or Ada Obi. Or Obiata, mm-hmm. which is it's called a red stew. And that's why we have the sweet peppers in there, and as opposed to green peppers and red onions. So it all comes in this nice, savory, you know, conglomeration. So it just helps people when you're talking to them, and it's a great transition to say, hey, are you aware of this? And more than anything, most people already speak to hey, the inadequacies of fresh food.
You also partner with Boys and Girls Club to bring kids out to learn about farming, to learn about what you do. What is that like?
That is amazing. Oh, my goodness. My kids, they're 40 now with the Boys and Girls Club, and they're a great partner. Cream City Conservation Corps have a lot of kids that partner with them, and they love and they're teenagers, you know, anywhere from like 13 to, you know, college students. And a lot of them didn't know that tomatoes actually came from the ground, and they're fascinated, and they get their hands in the soil, and it's like, oh, my goodness, wait a minute, what, huh, Miss Angelo? And I just, you know, talk to them, you know, like they're just regular people like we should, and get them excited about what they're doing. And they have so many great and interesting ideas because they haven't been tainted by all that junk food that they have access to. They're still curious, like introducing them to tech and food. The closeness to that collaboration is phenomenal. So it's just exciting.
It's like you experience the wonder of your garden all over again through their eyes.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So what is it like to build a business with your daughter, Stevie?
It's actually, we are really close. She actually, people don't realize that she's that salsa lady. I'm her stunt double. She likes being in the background. So I'm like Dave, and she's Wendy.
Well, now that we've got that out of the way. But how do you work together? How is that?
Oh, it is very symbiotic. We're very connected. She does not farm. I do. But she does love seeing how many great tomatoes she can get, the peppers and things like that. It's almost like we orbit one another, especially when we're, you know, picking out the tomatoes or she's prepping. We just know the direction. If she's going left, I'm going right. And it's not that we're saying anything. It just happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always fun. And she's brought me two wonderful grandchildren that's being brought up on the farm, so I cannot complain at all.
Where did she learn her salsa making skills?
Her brother, well, we always loved fresh salsa, and her brother is a Marine, so he was stationed in California, Hawaii, and Japan. She visited him twice in Hawaii and in California several times, and she just looked at the cuisines and things like that, and she just said, hey, Mom, what about this? What do you think about that? And she just trial and error.
We're talking with urban farmer, business entrepreneur Angela Moraney with us on how her salsas are part of a recipe for a real healthier community with a sustainable model. Do you have your own garden or farm? How has that changed your relationship with food? Do you live in a city? Is it important to you that your food is grown near where you live? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Angela Moraney here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with a Milwaukee entrepreneur, sees a higher calling to the salsas she produces from fresh ingredients, growing in her micro-urban farm, half an acre on Milwaukee's north side. Angela Moraney is founder of That Salsa Lady. Do you have a local food project that you're working to launch? What questions do you have about sourcing local ingredients, about using commercial kitchens or selling your products? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Angela is with us for about 10 more minutes. Angela, how did you learn to farm? Where did that come from?
Actually, I was backed into it. I attended Marquette University for their A program, which is Associates in Commercial Real Estate, and immediately partnered with a developer to create an urban farm within the development. And there was a generational farmer that walked me through everything. It was wonderful, and we ended up being long friends. And when we started the business, he was my first phone call. And he walked me through it for a long time. We actually, you know, learned under his wing. We visited his large farm in northern Illinois for a couple of summers until we got a hang of it, and then we bought this property here, and we moved on from there. ironically, 360 degrees, you know, beginning, you know, right back where I started from, my transition plan involves, you know, expanding generational gardening.
Mm-hmm.
I have a business partner that's Bonnie Halverson. She actually created Learn, Earn, Grow, and we've come up with Grands Growing Greens. And what it does is it goes back to that initial development and finds ways to introduce urban farming to multi-unit housing developments using greenhouses, urban farms that they may not have even thought of. And the project I'm working on now is in a community in the corridor on 30th Street. It's a huge project. And they're fascinating young developers. And they've already thought it through where they're doing a hybrid grocery store and kitchen and ultimately an urban farm and a farmer's market. It's right in there. It's like you don't have to go anywhere. It's one-stop shop, and it's in the hood.
Well, Angela, I think we have Bonnie in Milwaukee on the line. Hi, Bonnie.
Oh, my God, really?
Hey, good morning, Angela. How are you?
Oh, my God. You must have read my mind. Hello.
Well, I just wanted to call in and say, woot, it's so great to hear you on the radio. And also, I really loved what you said about the generational programming. I mean, I think that is so important because I learned from my grandfather how to save seeds, how to plant them. And when the first time I was working with youth in the city, I remember kids looking at seeds that I'd put in their hands and they'd look at their palm and go, "Hey, that's what's inside a tomato."
Mm.
Yeah, that's where the seeds come from.
You could see all those connections going on. And
yeah.
And you really want to make sure that continues, that people don't lose that connection to where their food comes from.
Right. And there's also an added benefit. So not only do people tend to, I like to say when you learn how to grow a carrot, you never forget how to learn to grow one. Even if you never grow one again, you have more respect for how carrots are grown. And that respect grows larger, too. So when people, if you've ever been to that Hood Ranch, you know that that is a sacred place. So you go in there and you know that there's nothing but love growing there. I know there's some tomatoes and peppers there, too. It's primarily love growing back there. And people respect land that's being taken care of or properties that's being taken care of. So if the trash is picked up, if, you know, the weeds are cut down, all of that stuff, then the whole neighborhood starts to see that place as a place of value and a place to be protected.
Mm.
And that happens all over the city where we have, where anybody has put in a garden.
Well, Bonnie, I'm so glad that you called in. I want to give Angela a chance to respond to your insights as well. Angela, go ahead.
Hey, we haven't talked in a couple of weeks. I'm excited to hear your voice.
Recovering from the summer.
I know, right? What is something you wanted to share that I may have missed, Bonnie, that came from our collaborations with Community Conservation Corps and Boys and Girls Club and Learn, Earn, Grow that you want to introduce people to that I may have missed?
We're brainstorming right here on the radio, Bonnie, so go ahead.
Well, I have to say you just really covered all the good stuff. The one thing I would add is that partnerships are so incredibly important. None of us have the money, the time, the energy to do any of the stuff on our own. So we all partner. Angela and I have been working together, oh my gosh, since we started volunteering at the Vincent High School, something like 8 or 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's been a while.
And we share each other's plants. I mean, if she starts these kinds of plants and I start those kinds of plants, then we only have to grow half as many starts, and then we can swap. And that's not just me and Angela. We do this with partners who are growing things all over the city.
Oh, and I want to jump on that for a moment, Angela, because
yeah.
You have really thought hard and fast about a barter program allowing you to trade for services or products from other vendors in order to make your salsa.
Yes. Yes, I've actually traded salsa for peach trees, Walnut Way. Oh my goodness, yes. For we've traded purple yams for pies from Mr. Dye. So it's like, you know, there is no limit. People, when people really love money, money means nothing. It's your work that they see you put into it and your craft, and they will not accept money. It's like, hey, can you – when I first had my family joining, oh, my God, in the beginning, we have a large family, and I'd offer to pay them, and they're like, no, don't pay me. I want some salsa and chips. <I'm> like, seriously?
And now 12,000 ounces later, Angela, 36,000
yes.
chips later,
yes.
you know, it's been a decade. Where are
yeah.
you heading next with your company and the farm?
Well, yeah, we actually expanded our herb garden. And like I mentioned, our generational gardening, Bonnie and I, you know, we're both the same age. You know, we're like stair steps. And we've looked into the future, and we were excited, but found that there was the cherry on top, and that was the generational gardening, the seed selection, things like taking advantage of the city things like rain gardens.
Ooh, I think we just lost. I think we just lost Angela. Bonnie, are you still there?
I am, yes.
Yeah, I think we just lost Angela on her cell phone, unfortunately. But, you know, we only have a few seconds left. But how could you spread this concept in Milwaukee?
Well, we are doing the best we can. The people, everybody who does gardening, they all know, we all know each other. We're all part of the same family, whether it's mm-hmm. Walnut Way, Teens Grow Greens, Alice's Garden. We are all working together. So, and it has been generational in the people who are doing this work. And there were many farmers long before Will Allen started Growing Power, but he's sort of the grandpa of us all. And we all learn from things from each other as well as our own generational teachers. Mm-hmm. We are really proud to be bringing this, to not only be bringing the access to food, but also the access to knowledge and understanding how to work really well with other people that may not be the same as you.
Oh, well, Bonnie, thank you for your words. Angela Moraney, thank you so much, founder of That Salsa Lady, growing all the ingredients for her salsa business on her farm on the north side of Milwaukee. We have a link, by the way, at wpr.org/mornings.